Hi there, and welcome to step four of our nine-step program entitled Stepping Stones to Healing and Thriving. In this step, we are talking about anxiety. So welcome to the transformative journey of nurturing calm within, managing anxiety for inner peace. This is a compassionate presentation for adult survivors of childhood trauma, or really anyone who struggles with anxiety. In this safe and supportive space, we will explore emotions, empowering strategies that all can be used to help manage anxiety. And we're going to look at ways to cultivate inner peace. This will allow you to reclaim control over your emotions and embrace a life of strength and healing. So together, we will embark on this journey of understanding adult anxiety, being curious as to what's behind it. And this is important because understanding what's underneath the anxiety or any other challenge we have is really crucial, because we can't change what we don't acknowledge or are aware about. So in this step, you'll learn effective techniques to cope with anxiety and its triggers that, with ongoing practice, will strengthen your nervous system and give you more self-confidence as you see yourself noticing and managing anxiety. The emotional regulation techniques and strategies offered can be used to regulate other intense emotions in life, whether they be pleasant or unpleasant. They can open the door to feeling more in control of them and more empowered. And anxiety needs gentle and calming space. So let's gently move through this lesson, keeping that in mind. So our goal for this step is greater self-awareness, all surrounding the anxiety that we may feel. We're going to introduce steps for developing a healthy relationship with your feelings. And you're going to learn self-respecting strategies for managing the anxiety itself. And then we're going to look at developing an action plan. All of this is going to lead to a reduction in overwhelming anxiety and panic attacks. Hopefully, you'll end up feeling more self-assured and less frustrated about your anxiety and panic attacks, and you will notice a reduction in them. So our process overview. As with the other three, we're going to start off with the understanding piece, the module one. We're going to look at anxiety and how it's related to childhood trauma, and we're going to delve into a little bit of neuroscience. And number module two, we're going to go to the rebuilding piece. So we're going to look at coping strategies and we're going to learn how to cope with triggers and unravel the emotions that are underneath them and some of the negative thought patterns. And then in module three, it's about integrating. So how we can adopt these and make them as part of our life, as part of our anxiety management. And you're going to be invited to create an action plan for that in the workbook. So module one, childhood trauma and anxiety. We're going to recognize the input of childhood trauma on adult anxiety. We're going to understand the mind-body connection in anxiety responses so that you can grasp what is going on inside of you. And in making this connection, it helps quieting the inner critic, the resentment towards the anxiety that you might be feeling. So let's get started. Anxiety in childhood. In your childhood, perhaps there was an atmosphere of inconsistency, unpredictability, unsafety, mental illness, and so on. Perhaps your emotional needs weren't met consistently enough to help you calm down and settle. Or perhaps your feelings were ignored or not validated enough so that you never really felt seen or valued or accepted. Perhaps you were raised when pop psychology believed that it was okay or even good to let babies cry themselves to sleep. These parenting methods, they teach children that their needs don't matter. and that no one is there for them. And that then creates despair. And there are other reasons for anxiety too, but regardless of that, situations like this often do create the anxiety in children. The dysregulation that is part of that becomes their norm, unless the child learns how to regulate their emotions. And they don't learn how to do this on their own. They don't know how to manage their emotions healthfully because they need to be shown and modeled how. So these anxious children then grow up, often with an emotional indifference towards their own feelings and or others, or they see others' needs as being way more important than theirs. Outwardly, they may appear like they've got it all together and successful, but inside, it's a different story. The truth is that they're not completely unscathed from their childhood experiences. Again, they look polished, but yet behind closed doors, they struggle. Anxiety in adulthood can manifest as feeling tense or nervous or maybe unable to relax. Feeling that the world is speeding up or slowing down. Feeling like other people can see that you're anxious and they're looking at you and judging you. Anxiety can also be what's behind the ongoing push to up the corporate ladder, wanting the accolades of success, but never really feeling fulfilled. So when there is no medical reason for the anxiety, it may be good to look at the emotions that are underneath it. And chances are, some of these might be feeling hurt, disappointed, embarrassed, or sad. Yet more often than not, there is a lot of fear that's underneath. So that's why there is a need to feel safe. So what anxiety can look like? Well, for some, it shows up as rumination, our looping thoughts, physical sensations of a racing heart, or feeling extreme fear, or a sense of doom or despair, and so on. For me, it was like a low-grade yet chronic feeling of butterflies in my stomach. And there was an underlying sense of fear and unsafety. But you know, I realized later that it was so much a part of me that I didn't even know that it was anxiety, because I just stopped noticing. And maybe you're the same about your anxiety. When in an unsafe situation, the nervous system usually goes into a flee or fight response. Perhaps you cannot physically leave or fight back, but your mind can, and it often does. The body is still trying to protect itself because it reads some situations as dangerous, perhaps even life-threatening. When anxiety is acute, you may start to shake or vomit, or the heart starts to race, and thoughts can loop over and over and over. We may think we're even going crazy. Does any of that resonate with you? So what happens when we feel that way? Aren't we told to calm down? And probably if you've also noticed that being told to calm down doesn't work. Because when anxious, that is not the time that you can easily control your thinking. In fact, it creates further anxiety because now you're feeling judged and criticized. And that adds to the anxiety, right? No one is realizing that the amygdala is running the show instead of the reasoning prefrontal cortex. And what the anxious person needs is to feel safe first. Another fallacy is believing that mind over matter is all that is needed. So let me ask you if that's worked for you sustainably. You've undoubtedly tried positive thinking or affirmations and other such techniques and have noticed that you cannot maintain this capability over time. It's not sustainable. So this means that while activated, a top-down approach, like talking yourself out of the anxiety, does not work. The emotional part of the brain and the logical part are not talking to each other when we're anxious. So as you're learning, there's much more involved than just positive thinking or changing your mindset. What else is happening when you're dealing with anxiety or you're in a full-blown debilitating attack? Well, this is the neuroscience piece. We're looking at the amygdala. So what's really happening inside? Well, when children grow up in an emotionally, physically, or sexually unsafe environment, so when the nervous system doesn't have the support it needs to return to a sense of calm and peace between the upsets, the brain and nervous system are deeply impacted. You've probably heard of the limbic system, the emotional brain region that governs the fight, flight, and freeze response. So the amygdala is part of that. Childhood trauma, especially when experienced early in life, deeply impacts the development of the amygdala. The amygdala, as the slide shows, is critical in emotional regulation, threat detection, and signaling the security alarm. So living in a constant state of unsafety and unpredictability, whether it is acknowledged or not, the amygdala will develop larger than normal due to its higher than normal usage. As it grows, its increase of control over the rest of the brain happens. Emotions, rather than logic or reason, they gain greater and greater influence in determining behavior and in our decision making. So perhaps you might notice there's a challenge with impulsivity or reactivity to situations. So, as childhood trauma survivors, our limbic system often runs the show. So, emotional regulation is much harder to do. It's quite challenging. When there is fear, a trigger, or emotional flashbacks, anxiety can cause things to feel overwhelming, where the body feels it's like it's in a life or death situation. For others, the body can shut down, and there's a sense of surrealism or dissociation may happen. Or we might get caught up in what's called doom looping, where the brain doesn't want to turn off. So there's the overthink. Anxiety can cause one to overthink, and we can get used to this being our way. Right? We start thinking that that's just who I am. That's normal. And some of the reasons could be that overthinking gives the body the illusion that it's actually problem solving, that we do have some power after all, or that we can fix whatever's wrong if we just think hard enough. Right? Our body and our nervous system wants things to be predictable and safe. So often a sense of powerlessness or uncertainty or helplessness is underneath the anxiety. Often looping or ruminating happens based on the belief that we'll find the solution if only we will think long and hard enough. And this can lead to overthinking and an inability to move forward. Then feeling stuck can exacerbate the anxiety. Overthinking can be a flee trauma response because we're fleeing with our minds instead of with our feet. So I invite you, please feel free to pause the presentation at this moment. Go to your workbook and follow the prompts. So in the workbook up to this point, we're inviting you to recognize the impact of childhood trauma on your adult anxiety. It's an opportunity for reflection to explore the connections that are between past trauma and the present anxiety. There's prompts to journal, so you can write about your recurring anxious feelings and their potential links to your childhood experiences, Or you can use artwork to showcase what anxiety feels like or looks like for you. So module two, making friends with your emotions and self-compassion. Here we're looking at rebuilding by making friends and developing healthy relationships with your emotions and feelings. So for starters, we're going to unpack emotions. Now, what are they? If you've noticed, the word emotion contains the word motion. Motion implies movement and energy. Well, this makes sense because the mathematical equation for energy is that energy is the result of mass times the speed of light, or E equals mc squared. Our bodies, being mass, use emotions or energy to communicate with us, and they are the catalyst for seeking some level of change or balance. Feelings are the words that our brain uses to describe the emotion. For example, if someone we loved has died, we will probably notice an ache around the heart area, or maybe we sense emptiness or confusion. So we call these sensations or emotions grief or loss. So experiencing emotions and feelings, it's important for living a meaningful life. Emotions are not to be categorized as good or bad, because life brings us both highs and lows, and the feelings that come with these are what make life interesting, satisfying, and rich. For example, the feeling of being in love or being loved and accepted, it adds to the quality of life. So when connecting this information to feeling anxious and what the emotions are underneath it, may I ask, what is your anxiousness telling you? Now we're going to get into emotional literacy. This is the language that's used to describe our feelings and emotions, as mentioned in step three. So if you were raised in an environment where people didn't talk about their feelings or weren't encouraged to express their thoughts and feelings or concerns, or maybe it wasn't safe to do so, well, then most likely you didn't learn a healthy vocabulary around feelings. Developing emotional literacy can be learned, and in their workbook, there is a feelings wheel that you can use for practicing your self-expression. And again, you saw about that and learned how to express yourself in step three. Then there's emotional intelligence, right? That's the capacity to connect with others on a deeper level, showing kindness and understanding, even in challenging moments. With practice, you can do this healthfully. As you become more attuned with your emotions and those of others, fostering positive relationships and handling situations with empathy and respect will become much easier. So, with ongoing compassion, self-compassion practice, we develop emotional resilience. Emotional resilience is a tender strength that allows you to face adversity with a kind and understanding heart. It involves acknowledging and befriending your feelings and gently embracing vulnerability, which helps you find the courage to persevere or problem solve. I invite you to picture it as a compassionate shield that protects you during tough times, helping you learn to grow and emerge stronger from life's experiences. In the workbook, there are some suggestions on how to build emotional resilience. So, building emotional resilience includes the practice of self-compassion. Dr. Kristen Neff, a pioneer in the study of self-compassion, has this to say, and you can find it on her website. She says, Self-compassion is simply the process of turning compassion inward. We are kind and understanding rather than harshly self-critical when we fail, make mistakes, or feel inadequate. We give ourselves support and encouragement rather than being cold and judgmental when challenges and difficulties arise in our lives. Research indicates that self-compassion is one of the most powerful sources of coping and resilience we have available to us, radically improving our mental and physical well-being. It motivates us to make changes and reach our goals, not because we're inadequate, but because we care and want to be happy. And I'll add that neuroscience is now showing that practicing self-compassion helps the brain rewire itself. It helps it to make new neural pathways that support calm and love and peace, where the nervous system can return to homeostasis and start to heal, thereby releasing the long-standing suffering that comes with childhood trauma and neglect. Self-compassion heals. So doesn't that sound like a worthwhile practice? One way to do that is by being curious. So, what kind of negative pa thought patterns about your sense of agency, whether you're feeling empowered or not, become rooted in your belief system? What about your emotions and feelings? Is there a part of you that is quite fearful or feels powerless? Do you have an urge to run and hide away under blankets or stay in your home and not engage with anyone? Do you struggle with social anxiety? Is there some underlying fear there in your body that hasn't been supported yet? What thoughts swirl in your head when you start to feel anxious? Are there triggers? Or does an anxiety attack come on so quickly that you aren't able to make the distinction? Or maybe you actually wake up feeling anxious. Perhaps there's a low-grade or chronic sense of unsafety or dread that is always with you. If so, then your workbook has some strategies and suggestions to manage triggers effectively, which will lessen the anxiety that you may be feeling. So you're invited at this time to return to your workbook and feel free to pause the presentation if you'd like and look at the strategies that are there for befriending your emotions. Try out some of the activities. And all of these are practices that increase emotional intelligence and enhance emotional resistance. And now we go to module three, where we are going to be creating action plans for anxiety management. But before we get there, though, I'd like to read you a poem entitled Stages of Change. This poem is attributed to Portia Nelson, which she likens to an autobiographical. And perhaps you'll recognize it. It goes like this. Chapter one. I walk down the street. There is a deep hole in the sidewalk. I fall in. I am lost. I am hopeless. It isn't my fault. It takes forever to find a way out. Chapter two. I walk down the same street. There is a deep hole in the sidewalk. I pretend I don't see it. So I fall in again. I can't believe I'm in the same place, but it isn't my fault. It still takes a long time for me to get out. Chapter three. I walk down the same street. There is a deep hole in the sidewalk. I see it there. I still fall in. It's a habit, but my eyes are open. I know where I am. It is my fault. I get out immediately. Chapter four. I walk down the same street. There is a deep hole in the sidewalk. I walk around it. Chapter five, I walk down another street. May I ask, can you relate to this description of growth and change? Do you see that in yourself? So mindfulness practices, these help or support us childhood trauma survivors in making changes. And mindfulness practice is a really good strategy. Practicing mindfulness or mindfulness itself is a practice of being fully present in the current moment. Anxiety tends to overtake the brain and emotions. Practicing mindfulness builds the strength and resilience needed to impede the doom looping that can happen when the nervous system feels triggered. Hoping to see it happening or catching it before the anxiety becomes full blown. Reminding yourself to take a moment or two to be fully present with what you're doing right now helps create new neural pathways that lead to desired change. Being mindful helps slow the brain down, which helps counter the looping thoughts. It takes a lot of practice and determination to change thinking practices, but it's doable. Another is grounding techniques. Often, when in an anxiety or panic attack, it's important to have help getting back into the here and now, or as we can say, grounded back into our bodies. So, if you have a partner, perhaps you can create a signal or a special word indicating that you need help when feeling anxious. Perhaps they can bring you some lemon wedges to suck on, or they can get a bowl of cold water with ice cubes so you can dunk your face into it and hold your breath there in the water as long as you can. Or if you live on your own, can you do something, perhaps find something tart or sour and have it readily available that can shock your mouth and stop the attack? Another section could be to stand and push your feet and toes into the ground or floor, and that signals your brain that you are here, fully present in the now. Other grounding techniques can be useful before the anxiety gets too much to bear, and some of these are in the workbook. Practicing gratitude and positivity can be healthy when it is balanced. So, to be clear, I'm not going to go into the practice of toxic positivity where negative things are just ignored, right? But when we practice gratitude and positivity in a healthful way, we do this by taking some time to focus on the things in your life that bring you joy and fulfillment. So, take time each day to reflect on the things that you're grateful for, no matter how small. This can help shift your positive, pardon me, help shift your perspective and foster a greater sense of emotional balance and well-being. Teaching yourself this will also counter the doom looping that can go on with anxious thinking. So you're invited to go back to your workbook and develop an action plan for supporting yourself when it comes to your anxiety. So you can pause here or we can continue on to the next slide, which will be the last one. So, congratulations on completing Nurturing Calm Within, Managing Anxiety for Adult Survivors of Childhood Trauma. You've now completed step four. So, the goal of step four is for you to have a greater self-awareness regarding anxiety, a start of a healthy relationship with your feelings. You're adopting self-respecting strategies for managing anxiety, and you have been developing an action plan for managing your anxiety. By doing the work, you are well on your way to feeling more confident about regulating your anxiety. I hope that you're feeling more empowered, and I invite you to pat yourself on the back and celebrate each tiny step or progress that you've made.